case is George Lee Hawkins versus Commonwealth. Mr. O'Hanlon and Ms. Martin. Mr. O'Hanlon?
Good morning, Your Honors.
Good morning.
If I may reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal. May it please the court, my name is Griffin O'Hanlon. I represent Mr. George Lee Hawkins, the appellant in this matter. Your Honor, the issue as presented to the court today is whether Mr. Hawkins consented to a search of his person.
Well, let me ask you that. Your assignment of error is that the officer exceeded the scope of a permissible Terry search.
Yes, sir.
Correct?
Yes, sir.
And then you jump to consent. He would not exceed the scope of the search. Let me rephrase that. If the search was permissible, then we don't even need to get to consent. Correct?
I would agree that is, if it was within the scope of Terry, then consent wouldn't be an issue, whether he had provided it or not.
You've conceded that the officer had reasonable suspicion of criminal activity and reasonable suspicion that he might be armed. Am I correct with that?
In brief, I did, Your Honor.
Well, then what is unreasonable about the steps the police officer took to determine whether or not that bulge on his hip was a weapon or not?
Judge, the position that I would be taking is that if the officer in this situation, as we've conceded, had reasonable suspicion that criminal activity was afoot and that Mr. Hawkins may in fact be armed, that the proper steps that he could take under Terry would be to perform a pat-down of the exterior of his clothing.
What would he have learned by patting him down that he didn't already know?
Judge, the position that I would take is that in a pat-down, he would have to readily be able to say that this is a firearm and able to then go further beneath the clothing.
But you've already conceded that he had reasonable suspicion that he was armed.
Yes, sir.
Which is all he needs to conduct a reasonable search to confirm or dispel that suspicion.
Judge, it would be my position that what that would authorize the officer to do in that situation is to conduct a pat down of the exterior of the clothing. As the officer indicated.
But Terry doesn't require that. Terry says that the officer may conduct a limited search for concealed weapons. And Terry goes on to say that the scope of that search is to be considered in light of the specific information known to the officer. Terry doesn't say you have to pat down. And, I mean, what we have here is effectively a visual pat down. He has visually determined that this person has a large bulge on his belt that concerned him enough that he wanted to determine whether it was a weapon or not. And I'm having a hard time understanding why, whether he lifted the shirt or whether he had the defendant raise his arms and lift the shirt, whatever, the fact that him checking that out had to be done only after he had touched it.
Judge, it's our position that Terry's authorizing the officer to do a limited intrusion upon Mr. Hawkins' rights through. Again, I would assert that it is a limited pat-down or frisk of an individual, whereas here, and as the court has previously noted, that individual has a full expectation of privacy in his or her clothing, and this is a full intrusion upon that clothing.
Well, I would agree with you if the officer had reached into his pocket, for instance, because he had no suspicion that he had anything in his pocket. But when he saw that bulge on his hip, and he had reasonable suspicion that he was involved in a drug activity, and as you can see, he had reasonable suspicion that he might be armed. I don't understand why that minimally intrusive lifting of the shirt is unreasonable in terms of Fourth Amendment analysis.
And again, Judge, my response would be that this is more than a minimally intrusive frisk or search as authorized by Terry, that Mr. Hawkins in this case did have a full reasonable expectation of privacy in his clothing. And I would argue to the court that there is no difference in this case between putting one's hand in a pocket or lifting the shirt. It's still the manipulation of Mr. Hawkins' clothing in order to gain visual inspection of a location that is not outwardly open to the public. And I would argue that that is the difference here, in that under these facts, the officer would have needed consent to conduct such a search.
A number of courts have disagreed with you on that point. The Fourth Circuit has concluded that the trial court here erroneously concluded that a pat-down frisk was the only permissible method of conducting a Terry search. The Ninth Circuit has basically said the same thing. Terry does not limit, does not limit a weapon search to a so-called pat-down search. Any limited intrusion designed to discover weapons is permissible. The rising of the shirt instant case was well within the boundaries established by Terry. Do you have any cases you want us to take a look at that would suggest that a pat-down is the only permissible search to confirm or dispel fear of a weapon?
Judge, I do not with me today. The only other thing I would point out for purposes of that particular point is that while on brief, appellant does concede the fact that the police officer may have had reasonable and articulate suspicion that he was armed, I would point out that the officer's own testimony in this case is that he did not believe that specific bulge to be a firearm. He, in fact, believed it to be a large cell phone. So I would note that there may be a difference here in that if the officer believed that bulge to be a firearm, that may be in line with the cases that the court has just cited, or Your Honor has just cited. However, the officer's testimony is straightforward in that he believes that this to be a cell phone.
I think he also said, I didn't really know what it was, and I was concerned about it and wanted to know. I mean, the cell phone looked like it was more of a ruse trying to get the defendant to show it to him, if it was a cell phone.
Judge, it may have been or may not have been, but the officer clearly testified that that's what he thought it was under oath, that he believed this to be a cell phone, that he thought it may be a large, what he described as a Samsung Note cell phone, and that that's what he was asking the appellant about. I think it would be a whether or not this is a ruse, the officer was under oath at the time and testified that that's what he believed it to be.
Well, I think he said he was curious about the bulge because it could have been a weapon. He didn't know what it was. It struck me kind of senses in his body to say, hey, you need to know what's going on.
I would agree that that officer did elaborate and make those statements after he had presented to the court his reason for inquiring with regards to that item on the hip, in that he believed it to be a cell phone. I would agree that he did elaborate into the realm of curiosity or some type of concern, Judge. But it would still be the appellant's position that consent needed to be received by the officers before he could raise the defendant's shirt.
Counsel, on that point, tell us why it's not consent to raise your arms.
Judge, I would argue that this case is guided by prior decisions of the Virginia Court of Appeals, in that what we have here is that there is no direct request to conduct a search. We have, as the officer describes it, a congenial, joking tone in a conversation with Mr. Hawkins, the appellant, and he asks, hey, is that a cell phone on your hip? And there's no direct request, hey, can I search your person? Can I lift your shirt? Can I see what it is? And I would further argue that the action described by the officers that Mr. Hawkins took in raising his arms halfway up his torso with his palms facing towards the officer is unlike the actions that this court has found to be consent to search in response to a direct request to search, those being either turning and placing one's hands on the wall, which I would argue there's no more notifiable stance with presenting oneself for a search than that. In the other case that the Commonwealth cited, the Wilson case from the Fourth Circuit, in support of saying that Mr. Hawkins' action amounted to consent, in that case, the defendant actually shrugged his shoulders in a direct response to a request to search. I would argue that this is different, Judge. As the court is clearly aware, consent must be unequivocal, specific, and intelligently given and should not be lightly inferred, especially when there is not a direct request to search. Here it's simply arms out to the side. He makes no statement. It's not in response to an unambiguous request to search his person. And I would argue that that is not consent. Judge, the Commonwealth bears the burden in showing that that consent was given, and I would argue that that had not been done. Furthermore, Judge, I would point the court to Parker v. Commonwealth, which is a 1998 Supreme Court case of Virginia, 255 VA 96. In that case, Judge, a defendant was stopped at a bus station. First officer requested consent to conduct a pat-down search, which the defendant agreed. A second officer approached and asked the defendant if he had anything in his shorts. And the defendant then shook his shorts side to side. While he was doing that, the second officer noticed something in his clothing, reached out and grabbed it. I would argue that is almost exactly what we have here. We have a similarly ambiguous request, not can I search your shorts, or to Mr. Hawkins, can I search your waistband or lift your shirt? It's what do you have there? And Mr. Hawkins makes an action that is not a direct response in saying yes you can, no you can't, or taking one of those positions that is so readily identifiable as presenting oneself for a search, and the officer goes ahead and lifts the shirt.
Counsel, I don't want to interrupt you, but your time is almost up, so if you want to save any for rebuttal.
I would, Judge. Thank you. I'll reserve the remaining.
Ms. Martin.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court. Kathleen Martin for the Commonwealth. And we would ask that this conviction be affirmed because the trial court properly denied the motion to suppress, and that is because the police found a weapon on the defendant during a totally consensual encounter and consensual search. First of all, with regard to the procedural argument that we made, the defendant's assignment of error has to do with the exceeding the Terry stop, but the trial court specifically held that this was not a Terry stop. He said, well, the police could have done that, but that's not what it was here, that this was a consensual encounter, and that was the focus of the trial court's ruling. The defendant's assignment of error does not really address that.
Well, didn't the trial court specifically make a finding that he had a reasonable suspicion of criminal activity and a reasonable suspicion that it was armed?
The trial court did make that. Well, what the trial court said was, well, this is not a Terry stop, but the police would have had a reasonable suspicion to stop the defendant. They could have patted him down when they saw the bulge, but it was a consensual encounter. So
what if the police, we look at not what the police say they did, but what a reasonable police officer would believe based on the facts and circumstances. So
right.
So here, the police officers erred on the side of caution and said, well, we think we're just operating under a consensual encounter, but in fact, a reasonable police officer could have concluded that he had reasonable suspicion of crime and being armed. Why do we care what the police officer thought about or even what the trial court found in this case?
Well, we care what the trial court found from the standpoint that if we're going to look at this case procedurally then and say, well, the assignment of error doesn't address the trial court's ruling and therefore the defendant has waived the issue, that's why we would care about what the trial court found. If we're looking at it from the standpoint of was this a proper search? Should the motion to suppress have been denied? Then perhaps it, you know, if we do have reasonable suspicion, we don't have to care about consent.
Consensual encounter only addresses the seizure in the first instance or the lack of seizure. It doesn't address the search. There's no such thing as a consensual encounter search. So everybody's conceding that they had reasonable suspicion to detain this individual. And the trial court effectively says, well, yes, he did have reasonable suspicion to detain him, but I'll analyze the seizure as a consensual encounter. But the issue is not why he was stopped, but why he was searched.
Well, respectfully, Your Honor, I think that you could have a consensual search in terms of the facts of this case, that when the officer, Mazzio, And even though he said he thought it was a cell phone, we don't care about his subjective motivation. We look at it objectively. And he did also say on page 76 of the appendix that he was curious it could have been a gun. But in any event, when he sees this bolt, he asks the defendant if he would do him a favor, do the officer a favor, by raising up his shirt a little bit so that the officer could see how it sits. And then he didn't ask him to raise his arms. He didn't ask him to do anything else. He just said, could you lift up your shirt a little bit? And the defendant then raised his arms. He didn't say anything. He didn't do anything. So after a short period of time, several seconds, Officer Aaron then lifted the defendant's, the tail of his shirt, and saw a handgun. And you know, that's what we have here. And certainly, you know, the defendant did not say when the officer reaches over to touch his shirt, oh, don't do that. I don't want you to touch my shirt. Stop. He didn't do any of those kinds of things. And so certainly, if you look at the Bynum case, for example, which is in 23 Virginia App, the police were asking the defendant about searching for from cocaine, and he didn't say anything. He put his hands on the wall. The police searched him. They found a car key that led to a stolen car, and that was said that the finding of the key did not exceed the scope of the defendant's consent, was a continuation of the initial voluntary encounter. And that's what we had here, that it was a voluntary encounter in the beginning, and it just simply continued to the point that the officers then wanted to see what the defendant had at his waist, and they lifted his shirt just a bit. It's not like they went up to him and ripped his shirt so that all the buttons popped off or something like that. They simply lifted the tail of his shirt and they saw the gun. And so,
well, if it's a consensual encounter though, but the police believe that the person might be armed, do they have a right to pat him down, or do they have to walk away if it's a consensual encounter?
Well, I think that we would sort of look at it as a continuum, say. You know, that we would have situations where you would start out as a consensual encounter when they're simply talking to him. And then if they believe that he is armed, then at that point they could move into a situation where they might pat him down.
But they have no suspicion that he's involved in any criminal activity.
Well, but they,
and it's not illegal to be armed.
Well, but they would have that in this situation. They do have some suspicion of criminal activity.
But then it's not a consensual encounter. Then it becomes a Terry stop, pure and simple.
Well, I mean, I think if we sort of just move this way, we can, you know, we can kind of have, we can have, on one hand, we've got a consensual encounter and a consensual search. On the other hand, if we want to look at it from the reasonable suspicion Terry stop, they do, under the facts of this case, have some reason to think that the defendant might have been involved in criminal activity based on what the Chesapeake police officers had seen. In fact, you know, that the defendant was standing near to someone who was involved in what they thought was a hand-to-hand transaction for drugs, and then they stopped the car that had been involved in that, and they found drugs. They relayed that information to the Norfolk police officers, and all of this happened within a couple of blocks right on the Chesapeake-Norfolk city line. And so from that standpoint, you know, they did have reason to think that the defendant had been involved in criminal activity, and they would have reason to think that the bulge could have been a weapon. And so certainly they could have patted him down, and they would have found the weapon. So really, in this particular case, whether we look at it from consent or whether we look at it from reasonable suspicion, Terry stop, the trial court properly denied the motion to suppress. And so for those reasons, we believe that the conviction should be affirmed. If the court has any other questions, I'll be happy to answer them.
Thank you, counsel. All right. Mr. O'Hanlon. Hear from you.
Very briefly, Your Honor. Your Honor, the Commonwealth or the Attorney General points out to this court that when Mr. Hawkins had his arms out and the officer went to reach in, he made no statement asking him to stop, putting his arms back down. But as this court is well aware, it's not his responsibility to stop an officer. It's an officer's responsibility to obtain consent first. And as this court has said numerous times, mere acquiescence into a search is not consent. I would again state to the court that the lifting of Mr. Hawkins' shirt is more intrusive than what is authorized under a Terry stop. It's certainly not outright authorized if this is viewed as a wholly consensual encounter. For those reasons, Judge, we would ask the court to reverse the defendant's convictions and find that the trial court erred in denying the motion to suppress.
Thank you, counsel. We'll come down and greet